gender. How many are there? Genesis 1 addresses this. Before we speak of Genesis addressing gender, there's something very important that is in all of the days of creation that are related in Genesis chapter 1 up through verse 3 of chapter 2. It says to let us. This has been stated in many of the prayer treatments. One of the most popular images of Jesus is him knocking at a door. And it's also been reiterated that that is interpreted to mean that he is knocking on the door of consciousness of all humanity. Are we going to open it? In other words, recognize it and let it in. Are we going to let the truth, as was lived by Christ Jesus, Mary Baker Eddy, and other advanced thinkers of the Bible in interpreting the Bible? Are we going to let those thoughts come into our consciousness? Or are we going to just listen to mainstream media that talks about man being a sinner? So the first step is that we have to open thought. And then we can hear, see, and begin to understand a little bit about what God has presented to us. What has God given us? God has given us a complete all existence from the very inception. He didn't have to do anything. It was already done. Mary Baker Eddy explains that where it says in the beginning, the first three words of Genesis 1, she said that really means in the only creation there is was unfolded to us as we could absorb it, step at a time. As she quotes the Bible, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little, one step at a time. So as it is related in Genesis, God basically unfolded everything else already being created before he created man. Now what does he say? How many genders does he talk about? He basically talks about man being a combination of male and female. Not all the different genders that the devilish thought is trying to convince one to accept as being normal. The image that is being presented with this prayer treatment is a little girl that says, remember, Mother's Day is for moms, not men in dresses. Your day is April 1st. And of course, we all know what April 1st represents. It's been symbolized as April Fool's Day, where everyone is tricked. Like Kurt Russell says when he was asked about what are your thoughts on the movies versus the life that you live. And he said, well, movies are fantasy land. The life I live, that's, for me, that's reality. Well, this cute little girl has it straight. Mother's Day is for moms, not men in dresses. Women are considered to be a representative of love. They are more of the nurturing characteristic than man is thought to be. Loving, tender, kind, like a gardener taking care of his garden. He nurtures every plant. He has the soil correct. He gives it the moisture it needs, trims it as it's needed, keeps the soil free of weeds and other things that are against the well-being of the plant. This attempt by the devilish attitude of trying to persuade people to accept all of this different immoral stuff that they are promoting as being normal is only another face that the devilish attitude is trying to present to get accepted. It's like what Mr. Winslow says. He said, imagine yourself in a room with a phone and with a radio. This was stated back about 70 years ago when there was no television. But he said, imagine that you have a phone that is just ringing its head off, and you have a radio that is tuned into station KOG that is just announcing the things about God, the truth. Well, if you pick up the phone, you're going to give the salesman a foot in the door. And then he's going to get his leg in. Then he's going to get his whole body in. We cannot accept a single thing, no matter how small it may seem at the time, to be normal unless it is the truth talking, unless it is God talking. And in Christian Science, we refer to the God consciousness as being the same as the Christ consciousness. Because basically, Christ Jesus was the highest representative of God. And his thought, speech, and action was godlike. And of course, his title was the Christ. So we refer to that as the Christ consciousness, or the God consciousness, being the same thing. So is that what we are really focusing on? Or are we willing to accept every little thing and let the salesman get his foot in the door until he's totally inside our house, which is our consciousness? Body is everything we think, say, and do. Everything about us is our body. Not just what we see if we look in the mirror, or someone else sees if they look at us as a visual, visible entity. Our body is everything. If someone else thinks about us and really knows us, not just seeing us on the street and they've never met us and know nothing about us, when people think of an individual, they immediately think of the characteristics of that individual. I mean, even if it's only their appearance, it could be anything about them, but probably 99% chance they're thinking of at least one quality when they think of an individual. It could be their name. It could be anything. But they're thinking of something that is not the lasting thing, but something that is a quality. They're not thinking of something that is temporary. They're thinking of something that is a quality that is attached to that person, how they are conducting themselves, for example. It could be their appearance, it could be their name, it could be anything. But the point is, it's part of their body being all thought, speech, and action about that individual. Or at least how we see it. So, do we want to be tolerant of the devil? Do we want to be tolerant of evil? Do we want to accept the evil that is being presented as being an immoral, unholy thought? Mary Baker Eddy emphasizes that it's important for us to all have a model, and that we should be cultivating our model. And again, that is a thing that is precept, line, and step. The quote that I gave you a summary of earlier in this recording. Is that what we want as our model? Something that is flawed? Or do we want to model it after how Mary Baker Eddy defines spirit, which is number one, being the only substance, and that substance being flawless, transparent, and reflective? What are we going to focus on? Mary Baker Eddy, in a letter to a student about vision, she says, are you able to focus no matter what comes your way? Are we going to focus on the Christ consciousness and the perfect man that he saw, even if the man seemed to be blind or deaf or dumb or even dead, or woman or girl or boy? If we are, we're malpracticing. We're malpracticing on ourselves, on our own consciousness. We're malpracticing on everyone that is involved in the thought. If we think others are seeing an individual as imperfect, we're malpracticing on every single one that we're thinking about. We could say the world sees that man as being blind. Well, we're malpracticing on the world, the entire universe, everything, all existence. The Bible says we should pray without ceasing. What does that mean? Mary Baker Eddy refers to the way we use our moments could be the difference between whether we are successful or a failure. Praying without ceasing means that every moment, which is defined as the smallest measurement of time, every moment we need to be portraying, thinking about, considering, contemplating, and projecting the Christ consciousness. No deflection, no diversion, no dilution, not accept any interference, no stoppage, no reversal. It has to be going straight without any variance, like the race with the turtle and the rabbit. The rabbit took off running. He got tired, so he stopped and rested. The turtle kept on trudging along, step by step, step by step, no variance, steady as a rock. Well, that's the way we should be with our life, and our life means our thought, speech, and action. Is Mother's Day for moms? Well, every day should be for moms and dads and sons and daughters and friends and family and business and everyone else. In other words, every moment should be a wholesome moment, a thought that is constructive for everyone. No, our thought should not be about men wearing dresses or women wearing men's clothes and trying to hide the things that they were, that are a part of their physical body. Everyone has a unique purpose. If we want to be cultivating man in our life, man is a single gender that is intended to represent all of the male and all the female qualities. It means completeness. It means we're not going to be gruff, like what might be characteristic of a man, but we're going to be tender and kind. We're going to be loving. We're going to nurture everything we should be nurturing in our qualities. But we should also be making sure that we are exhibiting the strength and the courage and things like that, which are intended to be attributed to male qualities. I remember one of the people on our website. His name is Richard Strain. He's in the authors under the S's. There was a woman that came to him and said she apparently had, her family was growing, or she didn't have a family. And she said that, I know how to do it. I should be promoted to a management position. And he said, well, are you exhibiting the male qualities? Strength and courage and things like that. And she realized that she wasn't. She was basically true and blue female. Well, true and blue female or true and blue male is not man. That's only half a man. If we want to have the success and fulfillment of completeness, then we have to be exhibiting all of the qualities of male and all the qualities of female and let them blend in a harmonious way. Let them be exhibited as they should be exhibited when it is necessary. If you're in a situation that's very difficult, you must be cultivating the qualities of strength and courage. If you're in a very difficult situation and it looks like everybody's hating each other, maybe in a negotiation for an acquisition or something, then you've got to be cultivating the qualities of tenderness and kindness and understanding other people and their position. You need to be nurturing the female qualities. So there needs to be a focus on where there seems to be a deficiency. It's like the folks that went up to heaven to try to get something from God that they thought they were lacking. And they knocked on the door to heaven, and an angel answered the door. And the angel said, "Well, how can I be of help to you? What service can I perform to assist you?" And they lamented about how they were missing something. It could have been anything. Food, shelter, clothing, or money to pay for it, or transportation, or anything. Friendship, business success. And the angel said, "Well, I don't think we have that, but let me go talk to God." So she went and talked to God, and she said, "Well," she told God what they said they needed. And God said, "Well, we have everything, and we have an infinite supply of everything. Give them whatever they need and however much they want." And she said, "But God, they're asking us to give them something they think they don't have. We don't have anything that lacks something. Everything we have is infinite." And so God says, "Well, give them whatever they want and as much as they want." So in other words, it was recognized that they had a limited thought, and that's why they were lacking. Are we lacking a male quality if we are a woman? If we're a woman, are we lacking a... If we are a man, are we lacking a female quality? Do we want to be the man made in God's image and likeness? As it says in the sixth day of creation, God made man in his image and likeness. Man. He said both male and female. Man. So he's saying that man is male and female. It's like back in the days of Jesus, and probably Mary Baker Eddy also, they counted the men, but they didn't count the women and children. He fed 5,000 men plus women and children, or 4,000 men plus women and children. We've got to think of men. We got to think of man as a generic name that includes both male and female qualities. It does not include 100 different genders. Doesn't include 3 different genders. It doesn't really even include 2 different genders. It includes one, which is considered complete. Mind is defined as being incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite intelligence, wisdom, knowing, creative ability, capacity, capability, functionality, action, performance. And all that adds up to a measurement of power. Power, P-O-W-E-R, power. And it's omnipresent. It's omniscient, which I already indicated as being, well, Omniscience includes intelligence, wisdom, and knowing. And how about the substance? The substance of everything is defined as spirit. And spirit is like something that is totally flawless. The only thing that's totally flawless is spirit. Everything else has some opaqueness in it. We don't want that. Do we want to have dimness of our vision? That is a belief that there's something opaque, something that is blocking the vision. No, we want pure vision. We want a vision of spirit. Are we looking for spiritual things when we do our looking? Our hearing, feeling, tasting, smelling. Are we looking for spiritual qualities? Or are we looking for human qualities that come and go? Like love. If we're looking for sensual love, that comes and goes. If we're looking for real love, which is spiritual love, that doesn't come and go, because that's a reflection of God. It's omnipresent. And there's no time with God. The only time is here and now, which means that it's now. It's not the past, it's not the future, it's now. That's the time it should be, is now. What time is it? It's like the fellow asked a Quaker. And he said, "What time is it?" And the Quaker pulls out a pocket watch. And he says, "Well, according to this alleged timepiece, it is approximately..." See, he doesn't say exactly, because the timepiece is not flawless. He said, "It is approximately..." And then he gives the time, whatever it is, 12 minutes, you know, 4 minutes after 12 noon or whatever. He says, "According to this alleged timepiece, it is approximately..." That Quaker knew more about spirit than most people if they give what they think is the time. The real time is now. What time is it? Now. When are you going to go to bed? Now. When are you going to get up? Now. When are you going to do the things you're supposed to be doing today? Now. In other words, we should be thinking about this moment. What are we going to do with this moment? Are we going to waste it? We can never recover it. If we don't make it productive, we're gone. We've lost. We've already lost the battle with time. If we're not focusing on what we should be doing now, we are already a failure. It's like the general in one of the militaries. I don't know. I don't recall which one it was, but he was giving a motivational talk to the new recruits. And he said, "The first thing I do in the morning is to make my bed." He said, "That means that I've been successful at doing one thing. So I start the day with a little piece of success. I make the bed." That's what we need to do, step by step. What can we do that will bring success right now? Well, certainly thinking about God, thinking about man and the relationship between God and man, we can never go wrong doing that. Even if we're doing some activity, we can think about, okay, what would God's man do? When I was in college, they had college organization meetings. And at one of the meetings, there was a fellow that said he was really exhausted. He'd been up for 24 hours, and he was doing this and that, and it was a very trying situation. And he said he was just finally ready to go to bed after 24 hours straight of being up. And he got a call from somebody, and his car was broken down. And he needed him to come and pick him up. And he was like 2 hours from the university. The guy just, you know, he was exhausted. He really had the very strong indication he should just tell him, "I'm sorry, but I'm too exhausted. I can't do it." And then he realized, well, the guy must really be in need if he's going to call him at that hour. I don't know whether it was midnight or 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever. But he said, he must really need me or he wouldn't call me. So he said to himself, what would Jesus do? Well, he knew he had to get in the, he knew he had to get in the car and go. And that's what he did. What would Jesus do? Are we willing to go the extra mile? Or do we want to just stick in our mold of being a man or a woman? And that's it. I'm not crossing the bridge. I'm not going the extra mile. I don't care if this person needs tenderness and kindness and spiritual love at this point. Forget it. I'm staying and I'm going to be a gruff old man. Say no. No, that's it. I'm going to bed. I've got to get up early in the morning and I got to get my rest. That's it. Sorry. Bye. We need to adapt to the flow. Go with the flow. What is the flow telling us? Is the flow telling us that there is a need for this or that or whatever? Suppose you're in business and you have a customer service department, which you better have. Are you going to serve the customer or are you going to look at your bottom line and say, well, that's going to cost me this amount of money. No, I'm not going to do it. They're just going to have to put up with what they've got. I had a computer that failed shortly after it was purchased, and I was living in another country than where I bought the computer. They shipped it to me. And no, actually, that's wrong. They shipped it to a friend who was coming to see me, and they brought it with them. But anyway, the point is that they have a policy, and the policy is that they pay for shipping just to the country where they're located. And if the customer wants it in a different country, which was my case, then that's purely at the expense of the individual. And that's what I paid. I forgot. That was where they shipped it to a friend that was in the country where the computer was manufactured. And they brought it with them in their luggage. So anyway, this thing went bad shortly after I bought it. I don't know, a few months, 3 or 4 months. And it had to have major things done to it. A motherboard, which is basically the main thing that puts it all together. Everything attaches to the motherboard. And as I recall, it needed memory. I mean, it was a lemon. And it was a quality company. But this thing was a lemon. So anyway, they had it all done. And they said, you want us to ship it to the same place as originally? And I said, no. I said, I'm in another country. And I need to have you ship it to me. And I had paid to ship it to them out of my own pocket. And it was not a small item. So the guy quoted me the price of shipping. This is the guy from the tech support department that had done the repair and replaced. Basically, they gave me a new computer. That's the price of what the repair was, basically. And it was under warranty, by the way, so I didn't have to pay for it. And I said, well, you know, I paid to ship it to you. The least you could do with me being inconvenienced by this all and it basically being a new computer is to pay for the shipping. He said, no, we don't do that. So I had it escalated up to the guy that was the number one guy of the tech support department. Or not tech support, but the repair department, the RMA department. He said, no, we don't do that. We'll ship it to the U.S., but we won't ship it to you. So I thought about that, and I thought, you know, are they really nurturing their customer? My dad had been in business his whole adult life. And he said the best advertising in the world is a satisfied customer. So I called the guy back and I said, do you care about satisfying your customers? He said, oh, sure. I said, well, then I want you to ship this to me at your cost because it's your problem. You gave me this product that was defective and it was covered under warranty and I paid for it to ship to you, which was a pretty little penny. And she said, no, that's against our policy. I said, okay, thank you. I said, I'll be back in touch with you. So I called a couple of people that come and visit me from time to time, and I said, do you have any plans to come down? And they said, no, we're busy with this, and whatever. It's like the guy that was having a feast in his house, and his friends didn't come. They all were too busy to come. So he invited people off the street to come. So that's what I was doing. I was calling my friends to see if any of them wanted to come down and take a little vacation and bring it with them. And everybody was busy. So I decided to go up the ladder. So I called back, and when the operator answered, I said, who's the manager of the RMA department doing, you know, maintenance on guarantee work, warranty work? And they gave me the name, and it was the one I'd been dealing with. And I said, well, who is their manager? And they said, well, that one is on vacation. I said, well, who's their manager? So it ended up being one of the top people in the company. So I got their name, and they transferred me to their secretary. So I lamented to the secretary what the deal was. I said, you know, I got a lemon. And I paid to have it shipped to you. And a lot of companies don't do that. But since I was in another country, I did it. And so they asked me a little bit of the details about it. And they said, okay, we'll take care of it. Don't worry. So I got a call from the guy that was in charge of the department that I had been speaking to before, and he said, where do you want us to ship this? I said, were you going to charge me, or is it going to be at the cost of the company? He said, no. He said, I got a call from the boss that was two levels up, and he said to ship it to you at our cost. You see, if I would have let the salesman get his foot in the door, it would have been at my cost. But that wouldn't have been principle. That wouldn't have been a little thing. It would be giving in to something that wasn't right. We have to be following principle, whether it means we pay money out of our pocket or whether it means we don't, whether we get it free or we pay for it. I was at the grocery store the other day, and I bought a case of oranges and a case of grapefruit. And one of them weighed, I think it was 22 pounds for the grapefruit, and I think it was like 12 pounds for the tomatoes. Or no, I'm sorry, it was, I got three. I got three cases, tomatoes, grapefruit, and oranges. Anyway, they charged me for the grapefruit, they charged me only the weight of what the tomatoes were, I think, or the oranges. Anyway, it was like 12 kilos. Which is, about, 25 pounds. And they charged me, that was for the grapefruit. And they charged me the higher amount, 22 kilos, which is like, 50 pounds, for the, for the tomatoes. Which means that they charged me more kilos for the lower priced item. And it should have been more kilos for the higher priced item. So, I had to make a correction. And it meant I had to pay money out of my pocket. That would have been real easy if I was dishonest to, to not say anything. But every time I would have taken a bite out of the fruit that they didn't charge me, or the vegetable, whatever it was, that they didn't charge me enough for, I would have felt guilty. The truth always comes out. And if we really want to do right, if we want to be the man that God created, we can't accept something that is not right. I don't care how little it is, or I don't care what it is, or the circumstances, or whatever. If I didn't find out till I got home, and I was inputting it into the computer system, I would have felt like I should go back there and make it right. Believe me, it never helps. You can never benefit from being dishonest, whether it is voluntary or involuntary. It could be someone else's fault or it could be our fault. But it never pays. Sooner or later, the truth will come out, either in our consciousness or however it comes out. We have to make it right. Mary Baker Eddy says that never go to bed without squaring your account with God. We have to square our account with God. We have to square our account with truth. What is the truth? If we don't do it, we're going to regret it. Doesn't matter how small it is. And I will be honest with you, since where I live, the English is not the that's not the the native language. And sometimes I have given up. I mean, because I've been in a store where there was no one that spoke English. And so, you know, it's been difficult. But our attempt should always be to square our account. Never go to bed angry or let someone else be angry. Like Dad said, make it right with everyone. It's the best advertising you can do. Make them happy. One of the greatest healers in Christian Science has been a fellow by the name of Frederick L. Rawson. And he says that our goal in life should be to make other people happy. He said, that's it. He said that should be our goal, to make other people happy. Now, that doesn't mean that we should do something immoral. You know, if the only way we can make somebody to be happy is to rob a bank, then I guess we got the wrong person who we're talking to, because there's nothing that should justify doing something immoral or illegal or anything that is not Christ-like. But if it's a matter of, let's say you're deciding on where to go on vacation, and you had your heart set on going snow skiing, and they might have had their heart set on being on the beach in the sun, which might mean you need to travel to another hemisphere. If you live in the north above the equator, you know, maybe it's winter, and south, you could sit on the beach in the sun. Jesus said how many times, you know, when the disciples asked him, well, how many times should we forgive? Because when they were going through towns trying to help people, they came across some very difficult situations. And said, 7 times? And Jesus says, 70 times 7. In other words, I think he was telling us that you always forgive. Your position is to not be judging to begin with. Why are you judging? You're not God. You shouldn't be judging. Dale Carnegie was one of the greatest trainers of success of all time. And he says, you better not make a strong opinion about something, because tomorrow you may have the absolute opposite thought about it. You know, maybe, and I'm kind of ad-libbing here, but, you know, maybe some new information came to your recognition. Maybe you were enlightened on something that yesterday you were blind to. Basically, what he's saying is always be humble. Einstein brought out the importance of curiosity. Always be looking for the truth. The truth that you think is right today may be different tomorrow. You may have been fooled. Maybe it was April Fool's Day. He says, never give up in being or questioning about what God is. He says, always be seeking the holy. Now, people don't think of him as being religious, but he was. Yeah, he was. In fact, he wrote something. He said something. I don't think he wrote it down, but he said something as he was coming out of a Christian Science church one day. He says, I don't think you folks know what you have here. And he said, blessed art. Mary Baker Eddy said, blessed art thou. Oh yeah, he did write it down because he wrote it with a capital T. Yeah, he wrote it down. He said, blessed art thou, because all that is in this book. So here's a man that was known for his genius as a physicist, and he's saying that Mary Baker Eddy, oh, and he also said that, imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. So he was complimenting her on knowing 80 years before he did that there was no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. Because they had discovered that as they were breaking down the atom, that they were coming up with nothing. There was nothing left as they kept splitting it down. So they realized that it was only the consciousness of the people that were doing the work that was making it seem to be opaque. But it was really transparent. So they realized it was only the consciousness. And in fact, around 1900, they discovered quantum physics, and that's exactly what they discovered. That it was energy, which of course is invisible, it was energy that was moving at a high rate of speed, and it made it look opaque. If you've ever read the account of the psychologist and the magician, we have it on our website. Eastman did an intro to it, and Rodwick was the author. You can go to the alphabetical index of her authors and find it under either one, Eastman or Rodwick. And it was a man that was from Germany, and he was an expert in psychology. And he went to the East, I don't know where it was, China or, you know, one of the Eastern countries. And he wanted to meet this magician who had a worldwide reputation of being able to trick people into what they were seeing. So he went over there, and as soon as he got there, he met the guy on the dock. And immediately, the magician made it look like there was a huge tidal wave that came in. And it was destroying the whole dock. And they were standing there. Anyway, he eventually got up to the mountains, which was a long train ride. And there was a big cave, and the guy came here, and he told him, he says, I came here to do some research on your ability as a magician. He said, well, you'll have to come to where I live, because I have all my equipment up there. So they took this long train ride, I guess it was several hours, and finally got up there, and there was a big cave there. So the magician said, we have to walk in this cave and go to the end, then turn around and come back. And when you come back, let me know what you see, what you have seen. So the guy went in there, and boy, just like every moment he was seeing some new hazardous dangerous situation. He saw snakes, he saw a cave, he saw an absolute stone wall that he had to penetrate. And when he got back, or he was near the entrance that he originally went in from, and there was an advertisement there that there was a feast available for him. Please come in and eat all you want and whatever you want. And it was really a feast. And the guy looked at it. He looked at the sign and he said, well, you know, that's natural. I've gotten down to the end of the cave and back, and I can see the light coming there at the end of the entrance from the cave. So, yeah, I'll sit down and have a feast. That was his failure. You see, error mocks truth. So they want to make it look natural for you to accept it. And that's exactly what he did. So whenever anything looks like it's natural, we want to make sure that it's really the real McCoy, really the real thing. We could be tricked, because that's exactly what the thought of a devil really does. It tries to trick us. It is decoy after decoy. Like Kurt Russell says, fantasy land. It's fantasy land. When I was a young man, I visited Universal Studios. And they have a tour there, and they show you a lot of the tricks that they do to make movies. And a lot of things that you think that you might be out in a jungle or whatever, you could be inside a big room. When you're traveling along in a car, they show you going along in a car and, you know, maybe going up and down and as you would normally do on a road. And it's inside a room that has your, you know, you are in something that looks like a car and it's, you know, and it's going up and down. So anyway, once you go through a studio tour like that, you think that you don't want to watch any more movies because it's all fake. Well, that's what most of the news is that we see. It's all fake. It's not the truth. The fellow I mentioned to you, Frederick L. Rosen, he said life is a movie. He said it's all a movie. He said, what part of the film do you want to look at? When I was in the military, I was selected to be the projectionist for the Admiral Committee. I mean, for the ones that were being considered to be promoted from captain to admiral, or if they were a one-star admiral, it was to go to two stars, or two to go to three, or three to go to four. So I was projectionist, so I projected all their records up on the screen for all the other ones that were qualified to be making the decision to be viewing their records, and they had an open discussion, and I didn't know any of them, so it didn't mean anything to me, even though I had to have secret clearance to be able to even be seeing their records, because it was all confidential. But, you know, that was seeing their life in the military. It could have been 20, 30, 40 years that their record of their life was there. Well, Mr. Rosen says, what part of the film do we want to be looking at? Because that's what life is. Human life is a film that is already predetermined. Predetermined by what? By our DNA. By our history. By our parents. By our grandparents. And the only way we can change that is through Christian Science, the system of divine metaphysics. Mr. Rosen says that he could tell, he was an expert electrician. You know, people came to him from all over the world to solve problems about electricity. I mean, he wasn't just an electrician that works in a house. You know, he was an electrical consultant. That, like I said, they came from all over the world to have him solve problems. And he said that he could see that the electricity within the body changed when there was treatment done to it. Treatment meaning you know, doing prayer, being, you know, treating through prayer, through spiritual prayer. He said he could see, he could measure it. He could measure the electrical charges in the body, because what it was doing, it was removing the negative charges. And what does that do? It changes our future. They have these things today called med beds. And that's exactly what it's supposed to do, through physical means. Now, I don't know enough about it to know whether they say, well, you got to come in here once a month for the rest of your life to keep taking out the negative charges or what. But I presume that that's probably the case. Because the medical industry is not going to give up getting their money. So they probably they probably have the removing of the negative charges to be a temporary thing that gets, you know, has a certain shelf life. And so it becomes obsolete. But that's all we're doing. In fact, President Trump, we had it on our website up until Easter, which was yesterday. And we'll put it back up there, because it's like the most spiritual thing you can imagine coming from a president. And anyone that knows anything about Trump knows that he is not a politician. You know, he's a businessman. So I'm sure he reads Science and Health, because he quoted from Science and Health. And his pastor, he went to a pastor that was a evangelical pastor in New York City when he was in business and living there. And we know that the pastor that was preaching the sermons every week had Science and Health on his desk, because he said that. He made a statement about that. The pastor did. And so and a lot of Christian Scientists like to buy his books, because he is very spiritually minded and oriented in his sermons. But anyway, it's not as good as it could be, because he still doesn't understand that Jesus is not God. But anyway, Trump made this, gave this, it was like an article. And it was about evil. Is evil real? Something like that. And in the article, he says that basically evil is an absence of good. Sickness is an absence of health. And he went through several examples. And he said, well, that's only an absence of what it should be. It's not a thing in and of itself. I think the title was something about, is there a real devil or something like that? Or is evil real? Anyway, I'd never seen anything from anyone in politics, although I know Percy was a Christian Scientist, and he was a senator out of Illinois, I believe, many decades ago. But other than that, I don't know that there's been a Christian Scientist that was in Congress or in the Senate. But boy, Trump had it nailed. I mean, we had it on our homepage, and it's going to go back up there. Because, boy, that's an example of how a politician should be. If any of you ever saw the TV series, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, I think was the name of it. And it was a guy that was convinced that Congress was evil, and he was going to go there and make a change. And that's exactly the atmosphere that he created when he went there. That's what we've got to do. That's what praying ceaselessly is. It's utilizing the Christ consciousness every moment. So how many genders are there? There's really one. It's the gender of the Christ consciousness. It's being complete in both male and female, what are considered male and female qualities, so that you are filling whatever need is there at the moment. Is now the need to be strong and courageous? Or is now is it the need to be tender and kind and be nurturing the more that are considered female qualities? Imagine how beautiful a marriage could be if you had both husband and wife that were trying to be man, meaning complete in both their female and male qualities, instead of having an ego problem where they were going to stick in there. I mean, I've done it before. I said, well, that's the principle of the thing. This is the way it has to be. That's the principle. Well, that's that's human will. That's ego. That's a facade. That's fantasy land. It's not the truth. The truth is that, like, more like what Mr. Rossin said, your goal is to make other people happy. Now, that doesn't mean that you bend and, as mentioned, and be immoral or unethical or illegal or whatever. What it means is that you put self aside and think of the other person. In fact, President Trump wrote many books, and one of them was The Art of the Deal. And he talks in there about how it's important not to be ever thinking about the money. He says, now, obviously, you don't want to do something that purposely is going to lose, because that's not principle. But he said, you've got to be thinking about the deal. What is necessary on each one of those people that you're negotiating with in order for them to be happy? And if you can make everybody happy, then you've got a deal that's going to work. They're not going to come back to you later and say, well, you cheated me. And that's what a lot of people think negotiation is. It's making people believe something that's not true. That's not real negotiation. Real negotiation is finding the combination of everything that fits together like a puzzle. And it has a beautiful painting at the end. It's like masters at composing music. At the end, it is absolutely flawless. It's like the conductor, and I don't remember offhand the conductor's name, but what he did is he studied all the other conductors and found out what they were each noted for, and then he focused on cultivating the qualities of each one of those that were considered the best of the best. And when he got done with his research and his studying and his cultivating this for probably years and years, he got to the point where he did not look at his audience. The musicians, he didn't look at them. He made no hand movements. And he just stood there at the podium. It was all mental. Everything was mental. They started when they were supposed to start. He didn't wave a hand. He didn't use a wand. He didn't move his hands, his arms. He didn't wink at them. Nothing. It was all mental. And when he felt that everybody was in tune together, then he would mentally give the message to begin. I wish that I knew where that article was. And apparently I did not title it properly or whatever, because I tried to find it. But it is, that is what Pray Without Ceasing is all about. That is what flawless substance is. That is perfection. That's love. Love, in fact, love means fulfillment, completeness. Real quickly, I'll finish what the seven synonymous terms represent just in summary form. So we talked about mind, and we talked about spirit, soul. Since spirit is the only substance, soul is spiritual senses. In other words, it means seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling, but it has to be all spiritual because the only substance is spirit. Principle is system and structure. Imagine moving into a new home or new to you and everything is empty, all the rooms are empty, it's unfurnished. What are you going to put in the closet? Are you going to have shelves in there to keep things organized? Or are you just going to throw everything on the floor? You cannot have harmony if you don't have system and structure. You can't find what you need. You might go out and buy it because you don't know where it is. Then you end up with two or three or four of them. That's system and structure. It's harmony and it's balance. And if you have a system and structure, it's self-operating. The next synonymous term is life. In other words, I didn't even say the definition of God, but it's one definition is from page 465 from the chapter on recapitulation. And it's incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. So the next one, which is after soul is, and after principle is life. And that means living the qualities of God. Living the intelligence of mind, the purity of soul, the spiritual sense of soul, and then you go to principle, which is system and structure, and then life. So you're living these qualities. You're living the purity of substance, of spirit, and you are seeing, you're looking spiritually at everything and everyone. That's soul. And you're going to have a system and structure in everything you do. You're not going to just get up in the morning and say, well, let's see what comes to me today. No. You need everything you do, you need to say, does this fit into God's plan? Is this principle? Is this spiritual principle? Is there a spiritual system here? So everything you do in living is a spiritual animus, spiritual atmosphere. And then truth is, imagine building a building. You want to make sure, if it's supposed to be a straight wall, you want to make sure it's 90 degrees. You know, the vertical is 90 degrees off of the floor, the horizontal floor, if it's supposed to be a straight wall. Of course, an arch is different. But you need to make sure that you're sticking on the path of truth. You're not letting anything vary. Like Mary Baker Eddy said, are you able to focus no matter what comes your way? Or are you going to stick to truth? When you go to the store, are you going to make sure that you don't cheat them and that they don't cheat you? Are you going to depend on mathematics? You should. If it's wrong, you should make a correction. You should take a look at your receipt before you walk out, or keep track of it as they're running it through the scanner. Well, after truth is love. And love means that you have nurtured all of the other qualities. And if you've nurtured all the other qualities, then you are going to be complete. You're going to be fulfilled. And of course, one of the primary qualities of love is plan and design. In other words, everything you do should be a blueprint that is permeated with love. All the nurturing, you know, as mentioned about a gardener, you want to give loving care to every plant. You want to make sure the soil is good. Is our atmosphere good? If we're in a negotiation for making a purchase or a sale on something, do we have love surrounding what we're doing? Do we consider what the other person needs and make sure that we're not trying to sell a square hole to a round peg, but we're having something that is going to fit into the puzzle of their life the way they want it? It's said that whoever builds a better mousetrap, they will beat their path to the door. Well, we want to make sure everything fits together properly. And we don't want to care about the other person as competition, but we want the competition to be perfection. Is this fitting together perfectly? It's like the gal that was the trainer of a girl's running team, a foot race. You know, they ran probably the 400 meter dash, where each one ran 100 meters and passed off. Anyway, whatever it was a race on the track in high school or college. And she trained them not to even look at the other people on the track. She said, you got to run your own race. And so she trained them so they knew how the running was going as they were running to make sure that they would finish in the time period that she had trained them to do. And they could feel it. They could feel it. They were tuned in to truth, and they could feel it when they were running at the right pace. Well, that's what we want to do. It doesn't matter whether we're racing on a track by foot or whether we're racing in cars on a racetrack or on bicycle. It doesn't matter. We need to be tuned in to what is correct for the circumstance. And that's the way our whole thinking, our whole structure should be. And that way we will be nurturing the qualities of God. We will be expressing love. We will be loving every part of what we're doing. We should be loving everything we do in our business, or if we're working for someone else or whatever we're doing. We should be loving it. God is all in all. There is nothing but God. And we got to know that the truth in any prayer that we do cannot be hindered, that the truth is going to be effective. It can't be diluted. It can't be diverted. It can't be stopped. It can't be reversed. It can't be interfered with in any way. Because the truth includes having all the capacity we need, all the capability, all the functionality, all the action, the performance, the power. These come with love. If we love every part of what we're doing, then we will be performing with the Christ consciousness being our guide. And remember, there's only one God. Jesus had two commandments: love God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind, and love thy neighbor as thyself. We don't want to forget to be giving, to be tithing. The Bible says we should tithe 10%. It doesn't matter whether we're making $100 a day, $100 a minute, $100 a second. It doesn't matter whether we have, you know, $1 trillion or we have $1. We should be giving 10%. To humanity. It can be in many ways. You can give it to the website. You can give it to an individual that you know is in need. You can give it to somebody on the street that's a stranger. I mean, there's many ways to give. You can spread it around. You can spend your, if you're retired, you can spend several hours a day figuring out the right people that you could distribute it to. If you're on retirement and you only get $1,000 or $2,000 a month or $3,000, you know, what's 10% of that? You should be finding a home for it. You should be giving to humanity. There was a movie out that said Pay It Forward, and it said, don't bother about who you're giving it to, because it's going to benefit. And you don't never worry about what you receive. You might receive something totally unexpected that somebody sees a need that you have. But don't ever think about getting if you're going to be giving. If you're going to be giving, then you've got to be giving. Never be concerned about getting. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. What are all these things? All these things are qualities, because qualities are all there are. I had a very good longtime friend that was really a wonderful healer, and she said, everything is qualities. Qualities, qualities. Everything is qualities. That's all there is qualities. That's what we need to be focusing on, qualities. Everything we think about should be based on qualities, because that's all there is. Everything else is temporal. Come and go. temporary. The scientific statement of being talks about all is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. God is all in all. One gender, man, the completion of all male and all female qualities in one. There's one consciousness. It's the God consciousness, the Christ consciousness. Jesus said when they came to, when his mother, I guess it was probably his mother and dad, came to the temple where he was preaching, they said, "Well, your mother and father are here, shall we let him in?" He said, "Who is my mother? Who is my father?" Well, his mother and father were spiritual. They're the ones that were expressing fatherly and motherly qualities. That's who his mother and father were. Who are his brothers and sisters? The ones that are expressing the brother and sister qualities. Qualities. Everything is qualities. Will we listen to that message that Jesus gave us so strongly? Everything is qualities. Amen.